Blog Talk Radio.
Hold on one second. Oh, yeah, the good old green secular talk light behind me was absent. So now we're fixing that. We are remedying that situation right now. Because that's what we do. We're hands-on. Ah! Okay, light officially on. Don't worry. The nightmare's over, everybody. The nightmare's over. Oh, shit. Dropping the microphone and everything. Okay. Okay. All right. Problem solved. Lights on. Busy show today, and there's a lot of stories that, as I was prepping them, I was thinking, I can't wait to talk about this one. That thought crossed my mind many times going through the preparation process. I have to say, you know what I have next to me? No, this is not in any way a paid endorsement or anything. When I went to the store, I got some groceries. One of the things I picked up, I'm serious about this, and I think I actually mentioned this on an episode of Kyle and Corin a while back. I had gotten Lunchables. Remember Lunchables? When you were a little kid and you got, first of all, let's keep it real. The other Lunchables can go fuck themselves. The pizza Lunchables, that's the one where it's at. I don't know about you guys, but when I was a kid and I had that, like, I wanted that every day for lunch. So I had the Lunchables. I actually had it yesterday because I'm a man child. And it came with a Capri Sun. I haven't had this in a long time. I'm going to have it right now. That's the stuff. This is not in any way an endorsement. I'm just keeping it real with you guys and telling you what I had yesterday. And it was fucking delicious, man. You might, you know, back now you might look back and say that shit was overrated when everybody was having it. Wrong. That's not true. If anything, it's underrated. And if it was socially acceptable, I would have that shit all the time. But every now and then, you got to break out of Lunchables. Every now and then. You know, I'm always hesitant to do segments like this. Because I feel like if I did a segment like this when I had, like, 80,000 subscribers. Okay, that's a lot. But at the same time, it's like, yeah, it's fine. Once you get, you know, over, like, 200,000... then all of a sudden, when you do a segment like this, people go, you getting paid to talk about this, bro? Like, is it like a paid, like, because you know how the Kardashians and shit, obviously not that we're anywhere near their level, but they, like, get paid to tweet shit about different products. Like, oh, I sure like trying this, you know, whatever, makeup. Wow, maybe you should try it, too. So they do shit like that. We don't do shit like that. This is just me keeping it real and telling you I had Lunchables, and it was fucking delicious. And the Capri Sun, it's a little too sugary, though. Yeah, it's a little too sugary, but whatever. Get a little sugar, get a little pep going. Oh, fuck, now I gotta just sip this, too. Okay. All right, so little teaser here. We got a compilation of Donald Trump, which is incredible. I mean, you want to talk about... people talk about, oh, he has mental illness. And I always kind of roll my eyes and just go, yeah, okay. No, but seriously, when you see this this next video, it's amazing the stark contrast and how he contradicts himself. And yeah, it's either a guy who's just 100% totally unbothered by reality, or he has mental illness. It's one or the other. So you make your own mind up, but I'll show you the video. Then we have Paul Ryan did a town hall event a few nights ago, and I have an absolutely amazing segment where a nun confronts him about his stance on poverty issues, and then we'll break down his bullshit. And then the Labor Department is honoring Ronald Reagan, even though Ronald Reagan was anti-labor. So that should be fun. And before I get started, let me just say real quick, everybody in Florida, stay safe. I see Hurricane Harvey. Whenever I hear the name Harvey, I'm reminded of Sabrina the Teenage Witch. But this is not about Sabrina the Teenage Witch. This is about everybody staying safe down there in Corpus Christi, Texas, or just in, you know, I guess like near the water in Texas. So speaking of Lilith yesterday, she's like, nah, we're, you know, I'm out of range enough. Maybe we'll get some rain or something, but everybody stay safe. So, all right, let's jump into it. And we have, we're going to kick it off here with this amazing compilation. This is from Morning Joe. Let's do it. Morning Joe put together a compilation of Trump's recent speeches, and the results are night and day. I mean, this is absolutely incredible. And you know how people say, I've heard it a lot recently, I'm sure some of you guys have, like, oh, Trump, he had mental illness. He may have mental illness, mental illness, mental illness. Well, yeah, I kind of roll my eyes every time I heard that, because it just seems like the kind of argument somebody makes against Trump when they don't have enough, anything specific to say about policy or something like that. But when I watched this compilation, I thought, damn, he either has a total disregard for the truth and reality and is just on Neptune, or he really does have some kind of mental illness, because this is just, I don't know if I've ever seen anything that contrasts this much from one person in such a short time span. So let's watch and then we'll discuss.
We cannot remain a force for peace in the world if we are not at peace with each other.
Believe me, we have plenty of anarchists. They don't want to talk about the anarchists.
A wound inflicted upon a single member of our community.
They've got clubs and they've got everything. Antifa!
Is a wound inflicted upon us all. It is time to heal the wounds that divide us.
It's a very dishonest media, those people right up there.
A new unity based on the common values that unite us.
And I really think they don't like our country. I really believe that.
When one part of America hurts, we all hurt.
These are sick people.
And when one citizen suffers an injustice, we all suffer together.
I went to better schools than they did. I was a better student than they were.
We are one people with one home and one great flag.
I hit them with everything. I got the white supremacists, the neo-Nazi, I got them all in there.
We have no division too deep for us to heal.
Yeah, KKK, we have KKK. I got them all.
There is no challenge too great for us to conquer.
The only people giving a platform to these hate groups is the media itself.
Fucking incredible, man. That's unreal. I got to be honest. When I saw, like, the headline of this, it was like Morning Joe compilation, Tale of Two Trumps or something, and I thought, okay, here we go again. So I planned on, let me watch this segment, see what it is, and then I'll... my commentary will basically be, yeah, that's great and all, but if you really want to defeat Trump, you have to focus on his policies and how disastrous they are for the American people. But then when I actually watched the segment, I thought, whoa! So, no, that there actually is an argument there. Just using his own words, his own incoherence and how contradictory he is, in his message in both of those. And this is the same fucking week that he's doing this. That's unconscionable. So I think the real lesson here is, of course he's unstable.
Now, to be fair, one, he's reading off a teleprompter and a speech somebody wrote for him, and the other one, he's riffing himself and shooting from the hip. But the point is, this is indicative of Trump in every respect. So you get it with his demeanor and his outlook, and one day he wakes up, reads off the prompter, and he acts like the way a leader should in a turbulent nation at a turbulent time, where, oh, if one of us is heard, all of us are heard, and let's come together in unity and this and that. And then the other one is just him going off the rails. But you could see this, you could see these contrasting statements in everything he does. So, you know, the best example is probably war. When it came to Afghanistan, there was a guy, I mean, save maybe Ron Paul and me, there's only one other person who was as clear as ever that they're against staying in Afghanistan. That person was Donald Trump. We went through his entire Twitter history and the comments he made from 2011 and onwards. He made at least seven different really crystal clear statements of, what are we doing there? This is stupid. Let's spend the money here at home. Let's get out. Let's get our troops out now. He said that over and over. Even in 2012, he did a video, recorded a video where he's backing Mitt Romney in the 2012 presidential race. I think it was during the primary when there was some rift between Santorum and Romney. And Donald Trump goes out there and talks about how this is so stupid. We have to bring the troops home from Afghanistan, and we have to do it now. I mean, we're just wasting money. We have nothing to show for it. They don't want us there. It's useless. And then he ends up flipping. So what you see here in terms of his contrasting, contradictory, you know, his outlook, how one is all about unity and love and the other one's all about hate and, oh my God, isn't that side stupid, and the fake news media and the stupid liberal protesters and all that stuff. That happens with everything. It happens with war, too. It happens with every policy you can think of. He's advocated for both sides of every policy you can think of. He was so strong against Afghanistan, and then all of a sudden he's like, yeah, we're going to stay there. And, you know, the news is we're going to keep about 4,000 troops there, and we're going to escalate further, and now we're even prodding Pakistan on this front, too, and calling them a haven for terrorists and whatnot. So there's no way that you can support him based on substance. That's the point that we're at. Like, you can't say, hey, I support Trump because I agree with his philosophy, because he has no philosophy. You can't say, I support Trump because I agree with his demeanor. He has no demeanor. He flipped. It's like a light switch, on or off. He can go out there and flip, oh, my God, look at me. I remember back during the campaign, when he was on the campaign trail, he said, you know, people say I'm not politically correct. I could be the most politically correct you've ever seen. I could be so politically correct it'll make your head spin. So in other words, depending on the context, depending on what room he's in, depending on what audience he's trying to pander to, when he's in front of a rally crowd, I am not politically correct. I tell it like it is. I'm a straight shooter. When he's in front of a more DC elite crowd, I can be the most politically correct you've ever seen. It's tremendous. It's unbelievable. But that's, again, that's him with everything. So you can't support him based on substance. The only way you support him is based, I don't know, feel. Like, okay, I made this this assessment during the primary, too. I think the people who are ride-or-die Trump supporters, what they do is they write off everything that he says that they disagree with, because they say, oh, he's just saying those things to, you know, appease the stupid liberal media or get the Democrats off his ass, or, you know, that's Trump being Trump kind of thing. So, oh, when he says something I disagree with, write it off. But everything he says that I agree with, those are the things that he really believes. This is how people think. But you have to realize how stupid that is. That means you're not really being logical in making decisions to pick politicians who are best going to help your life and your situation. I mean, this is Jekyll and Hyde we're talking about here. I mean, the contrast in those two things, it would be one thing, it would still be ridiculous, but it would be one thing if those statements were a year apart. That was the same fucking week. The same week. It's like unity, unity, oh, okay, no, anything but unity, fuck unity. I'm going to place blame on people, I'm going to rant against certain people, I'm going to tear us apart. So, I mean, that's what he does when he's oh, let me give the speech to the nation on the teleprompter. And then one, the other one's at a rally. You know, the one where he's going off the rails is at a rally. Dude, cameras exist. We have you on tape in both of them. And he doesn't seem to get, like, he doesn't seem to get that he can be held accountable. You know, like, it's almost like whatever he's saying at that moment, he thinks that's the only thing he said and the only way he's acted. But we have video evidence that the opposite is true, that you acted in a variety of different ways, and you've said polar opposite things on policy. So it's just, it is an unhinged lunatic running the country, a contradictory, off his rocker, unhinged lunatic. So that is genuinely unsettling to watch, and you just hope that in one of those moods he doesn't make a decision that is beyond disastrous. Now, don't get me wrong, he's already made disastrous decisions. I mean, you name it. We can go on and on here, whether it's the executive orders that allow the coal companies to pollute waterways, whether it's the mother of all bombs gratuitously dropped on Afghanistan. It's the biggest bomb we have that's not a nuclear weapon, whether it's the escalating with North Korea or the escalating in Afghanistan or approving the raid, his first military raid as president that killed a young American girl. I mean, he's already made horrendous decisions. But with a guy who's that off, you never know. I mean, he could really get us into World War III. I know it sounds crazy to say, but these things happen, man. World War I happened, World War II happened. What, you think everything's so stable? Does it look like it's stable? I just showed you the definition of unstable. Okay, now, let's move on to President Trump and his border wall.
President Trump threatened to shut down the government if he doesn't get funding for his border wall. He did it at a rally a few nights ago. And as a result of that, this exchange happened.
Sir, the president promised over and over again during the campaign that Mexico would pay for the wall. So why is he now threatening a government shutdown if Congress won't pay for it?
So the president's committed to making sure this gets done. We know that the wall and other security measures at the border work. We've seen that take place the last decade, and we're committed to making sure the American people are protected. And we're going to continue to push forward and make sure that the wall gets built.
Why is he threatening a shutdown over paying for it? I mean, again, he said over and over again, he talked about the campaign over and over again, he said Mexico's going to pay for the wall. He asked people, his crowds chanted back, and Mexico's going to pay for it. And now he's pushing, threatening a shutdown of the government.
Now, once again, the president's committed to making sure this happens, and we're going to push forward. Matthew.
So that was a great question, which is something I rarely say about the mainstream media. They usually suck, but there's a rare instance where you take something Trump said and you actually bring it up to him now when he's done a total 180 on it. So, yes, during the campaign trail, that was one of his top slogans. He ran his fucking campaign on that idea. We're going to build the wall and Mexico is going to pay for it. And they're right. He said it, and then at the rallies, he'd say, and who's going to pay for it? And everybody go, Mexico, yeah, fuck brown people, yeah. And so this is somebody saying, hey, jackass, what you expect us to just overlook it and not bring it up and act like it wasn't a thing? It was a giant thing. It was one of your whole reasons for running. You based a campaign around it. And now you just casually reverse and say, oh, did I say Mexico was going to pay for it? Anyway, we're going to pay for it. No, but you said Mexico was going to pay for it. No, but now we're going to pay for it. And now if the Democrats don't agree to pay for it, we're going to shut down the government to get them to pay for it. But Donald Trump of a year ago on the campaign trail would disagree with Donald Trump of today. Would say, no, we're not going to pay for it. It's not our responsibility. It's Mexico's responsibility. They're going to pay for it. and they have no answer. They didn't even, like, you would think, if you're a competent administration, you would at least have an effective dodge when presented with that very obvious, straightforward question when they try to hold you accountable to what you've said repeatedly and what you based a fucking campaign on. But they're so incompetent that she has no answer. Trump didn't sit down and say, all right, here's what you say if they say this. The president is going to do it, and it's like he's committed to doing it. But you said Mexico was going to pay for it. Now all of a sudden Mexico is not paying for it, and people didn't agree to that. Yeah, but to build the wall. Could you imagine? And somebody else goes on to ask this question, too. They say, oh, President Trump says, he's very concerned about the average American. The forgotten man will never be forgotten again. He says he's real concerned about the average person. If you shut down the government, the average person gets decimated. Are you aware of how that, you know, devastates the social safety net, devastates people who have jobs that are government jobs? Like, you're compounding an issue. You're making the problem worse. You're not fixing a problem. So how is he looking out for the forgotten man by hurting the forgotten man if he were to shut down the government over a fucking wall, which, keep it real, is more of a symbolic thing than anything else? What, you think we figured it out, guys. Nobody's going to figure out how to get over or under or around this wall. Most of the people who are undocumented immigrants fly into the country and just stay here. They fly in. We build a wall that stops the planes from getting in. What the fuck are you going to do? And by the way, immigration is net zero right now. So it means, you know, you don't actually have people coming in the country and staying here in an undocumented illegal way. You have more people, or it works out to zero, the number of people who leave and the number of people who come in. It balances itself out. So this is a solution in search of a problem. I mean, that's where these people are. This is what they're thinking about. This is what they're concerned about. We will find a way to build the wall, and that'll fix all of our problems. That's not going to fix your problem. It's not going to fix anybody's problem. Like, this is the biggest red herring in U.S. political history. The idea of, like, well, if you just, you know, punish poor minorities who have no money and no power, well, then everything will be better for the white middle class. That's not true. It's been the oldest trick of elites to get the middle class and the poor to fight amongst themselves while the rich run out the back door with all the money. So in other words, have somebody in the middle class blame somebody lower on the economic ladder for why they're hurting. And then the elite get to, you know, run out the back door with all the cash and say, see, yeah, I mean, maybe you guys should fight amongst yourselves, because shouldn't you hate each other and not me, who's rigged the rules in my favor and who gets government subsidies and who gets special tax breaks and uses offshore tax havens and lobbies the politicians and owns the government? Don't look at me. No. Middle-class white person. Don't you hate the fucking less-than-minimum-wage worker, brown person who came into the country and is stealing a job that you didn't have? Oldest trick in the world, but they have zero answer when presented with a very straightforward question. Straightforward as it gets right there. Hey, you said Mexico would pay for the wall. Now, not only are you not saying that, you're threatening to shut down the government if the U.S. taxpayer doesn't pay for it. Why? How can you? What are you doing here? New phone, who dis? Okay. Now, we move on. Paul Ryan. This will be the last one before the first break. Paul Ryan did a town hall event a few nights ago, and a nun asked him about poverty. And his response is exactly as pathetic as you'd expect from Paul Ryan. Let's watch.
Now, the next question comes from Sister Erica Jordan. She's a Dominican nun and retired school principal. Sister?
At the Siena Center?
No, I'm from Cincinnati.
Dominican Sister of Cincinnati, Wisconsin, though.
Yeah.
Good evening, Mr. Speaker. I know that you're Catholic, as am I, and it seems to me that most of the Republicans in the Congress are not willing to stand with the poor and working class, as evidenced in the recent debates about health care and the anticipated tax reform. So I'd like to ask you how you see yourself upholding the church's social teaching that has the idea that God is always on the side of the poor and dispossessed, as should we be.
Spoken like a great Dominican nun. Look. Sister, this may come as a surprise to you, but I completely agree with you. Where we may disagree is on how to achieve that goal. As you know, we all exercise prudential judgment in practicing our faith. And for me, the preferential option for the poor, which is something that's a key tenet of Catholic faith, that means upward mobility. That means economic growth. That means equality of opportunity. That, to me, means working with this guy over here at Gateway Tech to make sure that we can close the skills gap, to make sure that every person who wants a career and job can get the benefits. We actually just passed this bill in July. Before that, we passed another skills bill. That means, to me, taking this 20th century poverty program that we have, which is we're in the 32nd year of the war on poverty, trillions spent, and guess what? Our poverty rates are about the same as they were when we started this war on poverty 32 years ago. So the status quo isn't working, sister. And what I think we need to do is change our approach on fighting poverty. Instead of measuring success based on how much money we spend or how many programs we create or how many people are on those programs, you know, measuring on inputs, let's measure success in poverty on outcomes. Is it working? Are people getting out of poverty? And what I believe, when you look at it that way, I actually have a commission that Patty Murray and I set up that's underway right now to focus on these measurements. We need to make sure that we bring people into the workforce. The poor are being marginalized and misaligned in many ways because a lot of the programs that we have, well-intended as they may be, are discouraging and disincentivizing work. It's true.
The audience response gives me life there. I love that. Okay, so she asked about poverty and how Republicans, and Democrats to an extent, but obviously Republicans more so, they just let down poor people, you know, and they're not interested in helping them. And how do you square your faith with the fact that you seemingly don't give a fuck about people on the bottom rung of the economic ladder? And his response is, to sum it up, economic growth.
Well, you know, I do care about poverty. It's just that the way that we try to alleviate it is different.
Right. She's in favor of things that work. You're in favor of things that don't work and are really not even – really the goal isn't even to alleviate poverty. The goal is to try to implement an economic plan that benefits your rich donors as you pretend like you care about poverty.
So he goes, yeah, you know, economic growth, we got to have – our old method of fighting poverty doesn't work. We've got to have, like, economic growth and stuff.
But hold on now. We do have economic growth. We have a tremendous amount of economic growth right now. But we have poverty near record levels. Half the country makes $30,000 a year or less. So how does that work? If we have economic growth, but we still have many people who aren't doing too well, then maybe the answer isn't more economic growth, because when you just have economic growth and that's the main thing you care about, when the rules are rigged like they are right now, you have corporations that just pad their bottom line and they don't give their workers a raise and people are left behind and people are struggling. And that's to say nothing of the people who are, like, legitimately homeless, by the way, over 400,000 people homeless, 50,000 veterans that are homeless. So what about these people who are just totally left behind by the system? He's got nothing to say about them. He's got no way to address that. Now, furthermore, he says the war on poverty didn't work at all. Actually, that's not true. He said the poverty rates are about the same now as it was then. We still have a tremendous problem with poverty, and I want to be clear about that. But yes, when you look at now versus the past before we did the war on poverty, poverty decreased by 40%. That's according to Columbia University. The war on poverty decreased poverty by 40%. Again, we're still in a bad situation because we have half the country making $30,000 a year or less. But the facts are the facts, and it's easy to realize that back then it was worse before we had the war on poverty. And then also when you look at something like Social Security, that reduced the elderly poverty rate from 35% to 10%. That's a huge decrease. And Paul Ryan looks at the model that succeeded and he goes, no, that didn't work. Dad, let's deregulate, let's cut taxes for the rich, and let's focus on economic growth because that's the answer. No, that's not the answer. The way that you, alleviate poverty and move in the right direction, very simply, is to do what we know has worked the world over. You want to help alleviate poverty? Let's do Medicare for all, free health care. You take a giant bill off the table for the American people. That's a great way to help alleviate poverty because medical bills are one of the top causes of bankruptcy in this country. Do free college. We have a student loan debt crisis in this country. You can't even file bankruptcy on your student loan debt. If you take a giant bill off the table for many Americans and do free college and do a debt deal to cut down on the debt from college, from student loans, well, that'll help tremendously also. You know, if you have a living wage, that'll help tremendously. So there's a lot of things that you can do that would alleviate poverty. I mean, guys, if we did a program where we took every homeless person and we gave them a small one-bedroom apartment, did you know that would actually save the taxpayers money? It would save the taxpayers money because we have to spend more money, taxpayers do, for a homeless person who's out on the streets because they end up going in and out of jail, they end up going in and out of the hospital, and it net costs more money to us to have a homeless person on the streets than if you just give them a small one-bedroom apartment. So, yes, there are ways to alleviate poverty. It's by doing common-sense solutions. But all the common-sense solutions, he would say, are socialism, and they're evil, and they're wrong, and they disincentivize work, even though that's simply not true. So they're one-trick ponies, man. That's what they are. He has the same answer to everything. Economic growth, deregulate, cut taxes for the rich, you know, and everybody shut up, and the wealth will trickle down even though it hasn't. Well, we're on to your game, and we're on to how you're serving your corporate donors at the expense of everybody else, and it couldn't be more transparent. Okay. Let's take a break. When we come back, veterans are going to press Trump for help on a very important issue. And then we have a guy who's suing because he loves the Confederate flag so much that he's triggered that they might come down. So stay right there, guys. We'll be right back with all that and more.
the left, the left. I feel like I'm the natural nigga left, the left. It's like I'm on an island by myself, the left. Please don't make me slap you with the left, the left. You will face a one, gon' grab you with the left, the left. I feel like I'm the natural nigga left, the left.
Bye, y'all.
It's like I'm on an island by myself.
We are back.
Girl, please protect me if this shit.
Okay. Veterans are begging President Trump for help on a pretty important issue. Look at this. The country's largest veterans group is once again pushing for veterans to get access to medical marijuana. The American Legion, which has 2.3 million veteran members, voted Thursday to urge the Trump administration to allow doctors at Veterans Affairs hospitals to talk to their patients about using medical marijuana, and to even recommend its use in states where medical marijuana is legal. Currently, VA doctors are prevented from even talking to their patients about medical marijuana. Federal law would not need to be changed in order to lift that ban. Wow. So think about that. All it takes is just the word from Trump. Hey, just let them do it, and then they could do it. Or it just takes an executive order or whatever, and they could do it. You don't need to actually change federal law. It doesn't need to go through Congress. You just do it. And he hasn't done it. And then the guy's, oh, I care about the veterans tremendous. Believe me, that's who I care about. That's who I fight for, the veterans. The forgotten man will never be forgotten again. Well, you're not doing anything, number one, to fight veteran homelessness. Over 50,000 veterans are homeless. Think about that. Over 50,000 veterans are homeless. You don't talk to me about, oh, I support the troops, support our troops, support our troops. I don't give a fuck about your bumper sticker if you're not in favor of fixing that. I mean, that's an absolute disgrace. That's a moral abomination. All having any homeless people in what's supposed to be the richest country in the world is an abomination. But this is a no-brainer. Guys, we're not even talking about recreational marijuana. Now, that also is a no-brainer. But, you know, it's a different level of a no-brainer. 58% of the American people, according to some polls it's over 60% of the American people want legal recreational marijuana. In the case of medical, I don't even know the number, but I'd imagine it's over 80%. I mean, and think about it. So a lot of people who are veterans are dealing with psychological trauma. I mean, that's a very common thing for veterans seeing what they see. So what, you know, how do you address that? Well, in some cases, you know, there are some people who respond well to your typical pharmaceutical approach, whether it be Xanax or, you know, the anti-anxiety stuff, Klonopin, whatever all the generic versions are called. There's that class of drugs, the benzos, and those help a lot of people. And then there's also, if people are dealing with depression, there's SSRIs. There's other mood stabilizers. There's all types of stuff that they can experiment with to try to help people. And some people respond well to the pharmaceutical route, and some people do not. And yes, it is the case that some people, marijuana is one of the main things, if not the only thing, that really makes them feel better. But they can't, they're barred from even talking about it. And it would be a violation of the law if these people were to do it, if these veterans were to do it. So think about that. You go fight and die, you're told it's because you're defending freedom, and then you come back here, you don't even have the freedom to take the harmless substance that would help you treat your psychological problems. Then that's not freedom. You don't get to say, oh, we're a free nation, and then say, but we will lock you in a cage if you do a substance that we don't approve of, even if it's for legitimate medical reasons. Man, that's disgusting. And we're just getting the conversation started here with marijuana, because the reality is we've covered countless stories, whether it's magic mushrooms, psilocybin, MDMA. There are all these substances. What's the other one? Ketamine is another one. They've done tests on all these different substances, and it turns out in a clinical setting with the right dosage mixed with talk therapy, they help with many issues. Severe depression, anxiety, you know, people who are have a terminal illness and are really scared because they're going to die soon. It opens up their minds and makes them feel like everything's going to be okay. But our government says, no, can't do that because drugs are bad. Well, geez, imagine what guys like Jeff Sessions or Donald Trump are going to do when they find out that morphine, which is used as a painkiller in hospitals, when they find out that's actually reacts in the body the same way that heroin does. It's basically heroin. What? We're doing heroin? We're giving heroin to people who are in pain in hospitals? We can't have that. Immoral. That's immoral. We got to fix it. Well, if we're okay with that, you know, all reasonable people say, yeah, of course you could have morphine in that situation. Why is it that much different for MDMA or psilocybin or ketamine or marijuana or whatever the case is? So it's just so stupid, and all it takes is one flick of a pen from Donald Trump, and he's just sitting there, man. Because, look, they're old idiots who don't know anything. Donald Trump doesn't know anything. You think he's aware of what goes on with marijuana and how many people it's helped and all the personal stories of the people who are intimately involved with this issue and how many lives have been ruined by the dumb war on drugs? You think he's aware of that shit? You think he thinks about it? He never thinks about it. He doesn't care. He's president of the United States. He could fix it in 1 minute, and he hasn't done it. He doesn't give a shit. He doesn't know. He doesn't care. An old idiot. That's what he is. And he's the most powerful person in the world right now. He can improve so many lives in a split second, and he hasn't fucking done it. I mean, you want to talk about, you know how people say, oh, day one. And I bet pretty much everybody listening right now would fix this on day one if you were president. Boom. 1, 2, 3. I got my little mini pencil here. I know you can't sign it in pencil. You got to do it in pen. But you get the point. Even when they're veterans are begging him, dude, come on, man. You got to, what are we doing here? What are we doing? And there are a lot of people who get addicted to the pharmaceutical drugs, and then they have major issues. And you can really cure a lot of these problems by allowing medical marijuana, but no. Sitting on his fat ass, you know, tweeting some shit, escalating into another war with Kim Jong-un. Do the right fucking thing, Don. For once. Okay. One of my buttons on my shirt has been undone. That's pretty weird. Okay, I just fixed it. Alright, wait until you hear this next story. I think you guys are going to like it. A guy named Russell Walker filed a lawsuit in South Carolina to try and get them to put Confederate flags back up in the courts. First of all, why were Confederate flags hanging in the courts? That seems a little ridiculous, especially since it's like, oh, the courtroom. This is where we uphold the laws of the United States of America, which is exactly what the Confederacy did not do. They left. They were like, yeah, we're out. We don't agree with you. So they're a symbol of violating law and order, but in the place of law and order, they were flying the Confederate flag. Okay, that just makes absolutely no sense. So this guy is so triggered. He's such a snowflake, and he's so triggered by Confederate flags coming down in courtrooms, which nobody knows why they were there in the first place, that he's suing to try to put them back up. Now, he did an interview with the media about this, and it didn't go so well. So this is from reporter Eugene Chu, and you're going to notice here the heart of his argument is, look, man, this isn't about slavery, this isn't about racism, we just said it's heritage, it's culture, put the flag, the Confederate flag, back up in the court system, and the people who support doing that, we are totally, definitely not racist, and this video will show that.
The same type of symbol. Again, I don't believe it's a symbol of racism. I don't believe it's a symbol of slavery. That's my personal view, but how they feel is their business. But it would be ludicrous for me to tell you how they feel. Hey, I get on the street, I see Martin Luther King. I shouldn't say that. Martin Luther King. I mean, should I rip the signs down, or insist that they take Martin Luther King Street down and arrest that stuff? That's a public thing. I don't necessarily agree with it, but that's just the way it is. Hey, you had people in Baltimore a couple nights ago rip down a statue of Christopher Columbus. When is it going to end? We're going to go after Washington, Lincoln, Jefferson, everything else.
That was precious. I'm sure you caught it, but he goes, look, man, it's not racist. And I don't know what you're talking about. It's not racist to want the flag back up and everything, the Confederate flag in the courthouse. And, I mean, think about it from my perspective. So I go down the street here, and I see, you know, Martin Luther King. Oh, I mean, King. And, yeah, I don't necessarily agree with that, but I don't pull that down. Yeah, you kind of ruined the whole heart of your argument there, didn't you, buddy? We are not racist for wanting to keep the Confederate flag up. I want everybody to know that. And for all the coons out there who disagree, get in line. Oh, man. Look, in a weird way, I almost have more respect for the people who I hate also, the white nationalists, because at least they're honest. At least they're like, yes, we are racists, and we want to get rid of the minorities, and we're white nationalists. At least they're being upfront with you and saying, this is what I believe. You got slimy, weaselly fucks like Russell Walker who tries to mask it. Like, no, I'm not racist. The Confederate flag does not represent that, certainly doesn't represent that in my mind. We need to hang it back up in the courthouse and get these fucking coons in line again. What? What? God, so stupid. Just admit it, dude. Just fucking admit it. Yeah, I'm racist, but I would like to keep up the symbols of racism because there's still a lot of white racists here in the South, so keep it up. At least give an honest argument. I disagree with you, but at least give an honest argument. Here you say, no, it's not about race. No, Martin Luther King. He was this close to probably dropping N-bombs. Oh. And then I love how he basically tried to copy Trump. And you could tell even he tried to get into it, like with the hand movements. Like, you know how Trump, tremendous, believe me, when Trump's like, where's it going to end? Stonewall Jackson coming down. Is it Thomas Jefferson next? Is it George Washington next? This guy's trying to copy Trump, but he's like not as dynamic with his movies. When's it going to end? Gosh golly, when's it going to end? Just admit it. And look, understand something. So it's not up in the air as to whether or not these Confederate monuments or the Confederate flag, like what it represents. Don't get me wrong. I don't deny that there are many people in a younger generation who've been raised and told its heritage and culture, it's not hate, yada, yada, and they believe it. So I'm not maligning all those people. But what I am saying is the origins of it are crystal clear, and it's not ambiguous. It's not up in the air. For example, most of the Confederate statues, the overwhelming majority of the Confederate statues, they were put up at two time periods. One, during Jim Crow, specifically to intimidate the black population to let them know, hey, the white majority is still in charge and you know your fucking place. The other time period a bunch of them were put up, the civil rights movement, specifically as a fuck you to Martin Luther King Jr. and the entire civil rights movement to let them know, hey, the white majority is still in control here. The Confederate flag, the modern day Confederate flag, that wasn't even the Confederate flag that was used during the Civil War. The modern-day Confederate flag that we know of as the Confederate flag came back or was created in the 1960s during the Civil Rights Movement, specifically to be a representation of we want to keep things the way they are and continue segregation. So it's not like the origins of it, it's not unclear. It's crystal clear, and people try to obfuscate and deflect and pretend like it isn't what it is because they can't win the argument on its actual merits. So, look, if you want to be honest, like the white nationalists, and just say, yeah, I know what it represents, and I like it, okay, you're being honest, and there's something more respectable in that. But if you're like this guy, Russell Walker, he's just a slimy, weaselly liar, because the roots of it are clear, and he's trying to obfuscate and act like that's not the roots of it, and he's, we're not racist, we just want the Confederate flag up in the courthouse, and, you know, I don't go down to Martin Luther King Street and, wait, what? And also, don't equate MLK monuments or streets with Confederate streets. I mean, that is, yes, exactly like saying, okay, so we have some a street named after Goebbels or Himmler, but we also have some named after the victims of Nazism, so it's equal. They're equal. They're not equal. One represents something totally different from the other. One's the perpetrator, one's the victim. You want to put up statues of the victims of slavery or the victims of segregation. You want to put up statues to the civil rights heroes who fought against it? Sure. But if you want to put up the people who fought to perpetuate it, that's a very different thing. That's a very different thing. And at least be honest about what it is. Again, you could disagree with me as to whether or not we should keep it up. But just be honest about it. Don't fucking obfuscate because you're full of shit. And nobody's ever been more full of shit than Russell Walker. Okay. Okay. Now we move on. It is time to discuss round two. Uh-oh, what does that mean? Here we go again. It's time for round two, everybody. YouTube cracking down on hate speech. We've seen this before. And actually, to be crystal clear, it's never really gone away. I touched on that briefly recently, but you're going to get some more information on it right now. So this is from The Hill. YouTube is implementing a new feature it says will help curb hate speech on its platform. The company is targeting videos that contain controversial, religious, or supremacist content. Controversial. Okay. But which do not violate its terms of service. Instead of taking down the videos in question, YouTube will put them in a stripped-down digital purgatory where they will no longer be easily discoverable, nor have the features normal videos do. Users viewing the videos will be greeted with a message warning them that they are about to see offensive content. The videos also will not appear in sections where YouTube recommends content to users. Key features like leaving comments, likes, or seeing suggested videos will not be available. The videos also will not be monetized. Google, which owns YouTube, declined to comment on the record about the changes. In June, the company vowed it will be taking a tougher stance on videos that do not clearly violate its policies. Let me repeat that. The company vowed it will be taking a tougher stance on videos that do not clearly violate its policies. These videos will have less engagement and be harder to find, Google's general counsel Kent Walker said at the time. We think this strikes the right balance between free expression and access to information without promoting extremely offensive viewpoints. Increasingly, videos on YouTube are testing the company's line between problematic speech and speech that clearly violates its standards. More videos deride certain groups but fall short of calling for violence. The alt-right and white supremacists have also turned to the platform to spread their views. The company was criticized earlier in the year for profiting off ads next to videos with hate content, such as those from white supremacists and Islamic State in Iraq and Syria sympathizers. In March, major companies like Verizon and Johnson & Johnson pulled their ads from YouTube temporarily. YouTube and Google, in response, announced they would take more aggressive action against hateful and offensive content, including better detection of such videos. YouTube says it will notify users whose content will be affected on Thursday. The Google subsidiary stressed that Thursday was a starting point and that more videos will be targeted on a rolling basis as content is flagged and reviewed. The company also noted the process requires human review and acknowledged that there may occasionally be incorrect assessments of what is offensive. Accordingly, users who feel like their content has been incorrectly marked as offensive can seek an appeal. YouTube's move is the latest step internet companies are taking to reduce hate speech and the presence of white supremacists on their platform in the wake of deadly violence in Charlottesville. Facebook, Twitter, Spotify, GoDaddy, Google, and others announced that they would remove white supremacist content from their site.
Okay. Yeah. I don't trust them. You shouldn't trust them either. They're going to use a hatchet when they should be using a scalpel, and they've already done that. They've already done that. So for those of you who weren't following closely the events a few months back, there was something that we're calling YouTube-pocalypse, which was, to sum it up as quickly as possible, there were some ads that managed to slip through and get on genuine, like, ISIS content and Nazi content. And it was, like, mainstream ads, like Kraft. And so somebody took note of that and wrote an article on it and basically made it out to be this gigantic systemic problem on YouTube, which it was not. See, what happens is, the way YouTube works, it can, if it's a hateful video, but there's nothing in the title or the tags that would indicate it being a hateful video, then how is YouTube supposed to know with, like, what, millions of content, of hours of content uploaded every day? How are they supposed to know something is hateful if something in the title, for example, is about loving puppies and rainbows and the tags are all about puppies and rainbows and then, you know, you click on the video and it's some white supremacist shit? How are they supposed to know that, oh, this is bad? So what happens is everything works on an algorithm, and you would have some ad slip through on some hateful content. It was maybe a problem in 0.00001% of cases, but it is not a systemic problem. Well, in step the dumbass corporate media to blow it out of proportion and act like it's a systemic problem, so YouTube immediately starts swinging at the kneecaps of its creators. Virtually the entire news and politics division was defunded overnight. So there were days where I had 600,000 views and I made no money at all. So there was a time when Secular Talk was on a legit blacklist, where we were generating more views than mainstream media, more views than CNN in the middle of the day, and we got nothing. Now, after a while, we were taken off of the blacklist, but we're still in this weird gray area where we don't get the premium ads. We get, like, shittier ads, and we don't get as many of them placed. Now, also, same thing happened with many other news and politics channels. Our content is no longer treated like any other content would be. It's in this zone, this area, whatever you want to call it. I don't know the right terminology, as you can tell, where it's not promoted as much. It's not, doesn't show up as much in the recommended videos. It's buried more. So there's prioritizing of what content gets to the top. And it used to be the case that if you get a lot of views and if your metadata is right, which is like the title and tags on the video, well, then you're going to get, it's going to be out there a lot. Your content is going to be out there a lot. Well, now we're not prioritized no matter how good our metadata is, no matter how many views we get, no matter how good the content is. Because YouTube is fundamentally incapable from distinguishing content that outright promotes Nazism or ISIS from content that is a news show that just covers Nazism and ISIS. So you guys know this because you watch the show. You see all the time we're covering these things because they're in the fucking news. So we've tried to come up with ways, myself and other YouTubers, okay, we got to try to skirt the algorithm. How do we skirt the algorithm? I don't know, use some weird kind of lettering with symbols over it and stuff to try to find a way to trick the demonetization bot and get the monetization while still discussing the serious issues. And sometimes it works. Most of the time it doesn't work. Even when it works and we get ads, we get shittier ads that don't pay as well. So we've been in this shitty spot, myself and many other YouTubers that I know who do what I do or something similar to what I do. And it's really been a troubling time because we've had to rely on you. I mean, we've gone directly to the audience and crowdfunded, basically, and said don't let them effectively censor us. Now, the people who are hit the worst are the up-and-comers. If people aren't already established enough to the point where they can plead to the audience, it's fucking rough out there, man, if you cover news and politics. Because just by nature of what you do, so much of the content you discuss is going to be on foreign policy, it's going to be on Israel, it's going to be on Saudi Arabia, it's going to be on ISIS, it's going to be on white supremacists, it's going to be all these things that YouTube just has a block and says, nope, not prioritizing that, not funding that, walking on eggshells here. And now they're doing round two. So it's already bad. It never fully rebounded, not even close. And now what they're doing is they're going round two. And again, you heard the article. Everything hinges on the definition of the words. So we're cracking down on hate speech. Well, what exactly constitutes hate speech? I hate religion. I rant against religion. Does that count? I hate the establishment. I rant against the establishment. Does that count? I hate out-of-touch politicians. I rant against them. Does that count? You know, you can go on and on. I use foul language. Yes, in YouTube's prioritization of what gets demonetized, it says, you know, they have the ability to demonetize anything with foul language. Whoa. So it really is cracking down on the whole news and politics division and all your favorite independent YouTube creators. And as I mentioned previously, isn't that mighty fucking convenient? Because at a time when we started to eclipse mainstream media in terms of numbers, YouTube, all of a sudden they jack the funding from news and politics on YouTube, and then they redirect it to YouTube TV to go right back to the people who we just defeated when it comes to views. So you have old school TV getting replaced by YouTube and new media. And then all of a sudden, wow, look at that, defunding of news and politics on YouTube, and they funnel the money right back to the same people who we just beat when it comes to views in the form of YouTube TV. Now you give it right back to CBS, ABC, Fox, and the rest of them who we were starting to beat the pants off of. So, how mighty fucking convenient. Independent channels. Now, don't get me wrong. That doesn't mean there's no actual hateful content out there. Of course there is. And that doesn't mean there aren't odious opinions out there. Of course there are. But, I mean, if you have some odious opinions, but it's not legit Nazism or ISIS, I don't know why that should be defunded. So what, if people disagree with me, they should defund them? No. If it's legit, like, terrorist shit, of course, the brands have every right to say, I don't want to be associated with that. But again, YouTube is not intelligent enough to distinguish, the algorithm is not intelligent enough to distinguish between genuinely hateful content and just discussing the broad topic or even just disagreeing with hateful shit. So people are getting destroyed, man. Right wing on YouTube, left wing on YouTube, centrist, whatever the fuck you want to call it. If you do news and politics and you discuss serious issues, you're getting destroyed. So if you're a fan of myself, if you're a fan of Jimmy Dore, if you're a fan of David Pakman, if you're a fan of Humanist Report, if you're a fan of, you know, you fill in the blank with your favorite YouTuber, political or even not just explicitly political and branches out into other controversial topics, Amazing Atheist, whoever, you name it. If you're a fan of them, they need your support now more than ever. So for us, it's it's patreon.com/secular talk. If you can do $2 a month, that's enough right there to just save us. I mean, we have enough people listening to the show where if enough of you give $2 a month, which is just basically like buying me a cup of coffee every month, then we're beyond okay, and we more than make up for the lack of funding through the traditional route of ads via views. So as long as they don't take the channel down, okay, which they're not doing that, but they are kind of burying the content, demonetizing the content, shoving it off in the corner, wrongly saying, hey, this is offensive or this is hateful or this is this or this is that. But as long as they don't just take us down, they can't defeat us. Because I know you guys will pull through, you guys will prop the show up, and the power of our ideas in the long run will win because we're already beating the ancient, old school losers in old media. Okay. Let's take our final break, and when we come back, Trump's Labor Department, and then we have Florida executing somebody last night, and that is, when you hear the details of that, it's amazing that we're doing this kind of shit in 2017. So stay right there, guys. We have all that and more. We'll be right back.
Thanks so much for the permitted thing.
Well,
I'm a disaster.
I'm like a bull master.
Put on the table, rock and ghetto blaster.
Sign up at the money, cover to the resort. Stop sweating all the f***s in the bank, I saw it.
The labor movement right across the face. And actually, that may not be strong enough. Those words are not strong enough. He's slapping the labor movement right across the face with an anvil. He's doing the old anvil slap, which isn't a thing, but we just made it one. So there you go. Okay. Trump's Labor Department is about to honor a union killer. Isn't that great? So this is from Zaid Jilani of The Intercept. Every year, the Department of Labor posthumously honors Americans whose distinctive contributions to the field of labor have enhanced the quality of life of millions yesterday, today, and for generations to come. Past honorees have included socialist leader Eugene Debs and labor organizer Cesar Chavez. Today, Secretary of Labor Alexander Acosta announced that the department's first honoree under the Trump administration would be a former president, Ronald Reagan. This marks perhaps the first time the Department of Labor has honored someone who openly and actively diminished the power of American labor unions. The department press release notes that Reagan, a Republican, was a member of a union himself, the Screen Actors Guild, which he led. It also notes that he was vocally supportive of the Solidarity Union in Poland, which did battle with the Soviet Union. But it curiously leaves out Reagan's most high-profile interaction with organized labor, his intervention into the Professional Air Traffic Controllers Organization strike in 1981, set the tone for a presidency that was more hostile to organized labor than any other since before World War II, when almost 13,000 controllers walked out on talks with the Federal Aviation Administration that year, an illegal strike. Reagan ordered them to return to work. When they did not, he fired 11,000 of them. Writing about the PATCO strike three decades later, historian Joseph A. McCartan noted that it created a sea change in attitude by presidential administrations toward labor. Quote, although there were 39 illegal work stoppages against the federal government between 1962 and 1981, no significant federal job actions followed Reagan's firing of the PATCO strikers. Reagan also appointed staunchly anti-union Donald Dotson to head the National Labor Relations Board. Dotson once equated collective bargaining with labor monopoly, the destruction of individual freedom, and the destruction of the marketplace as the mechanism for determining the value of labor. At the start of Reagan's term, get this, guys, 21% of wage and salary workers belonged to a union. 21%. In 1988, his last year in office, 16.2% did. What? Okay, 21% of wage and salary workers belong to a union when he came in. 16.2% his last year in office. They broke unions. They broke unions. They cracked down on them. They had anti-union policies. This is what you get from a right-wing administration. You get trickle-down economics, deregulation, cut taxes for the rich, try to discourage unionization, and the results are, of course, you have falling wages for the middle class. There's a direct correlation between the strength of unions and the strength of the middle class, the income of the middle class. So now that doesn't mean there aren't, you know, some downsides to them. Of course, we all know the stereotype of old workers who sit on their ass and play cards all day, but they're in a union, so they get protected and they make perhaps more money than they should. But that's, like, I view that as a necessary evil to the fact that overall you have a much healthier country because you have a much healthier middle class when you have unions and you have worker protections. When people get health care, when people get paid vacation time, and when people's wages are higher. It's like these so-called right-to-work laws, which are really right-to-work-for-less laws. People in those states make significantly less money than people in union states. So Ronald Reagan was a union buster. He was anti-union. And now he's being honored by the Labor Department. I think what pisses me off most with stories like this is just how dishonest the Republicans are. Because it's one thing if you make the argument, and many Republicans do, many elite Republicans, to be clear. They say, okay, so Ronald Reagan was anti-union. But that's a good thing. I like that. I like when Reagan's anti-union because I'm an elitist myself and I make a lot of money and I would rather, be able to hire and fire workers more at will and not have to deal with collective bargaining and negotiations, and it's a pain in the ass when you deal with them and I think they're unreasonable and yada, yada, yada. So if you're honest about your beliefs, like, oh, I like Ronald Reagan because he's anti-union and I'm anti-union. Okay, that's fine. I disagree with you, but at least you're being honest and straightforward. This is just dishonest. Like, oh, we're going to honor him. The Labor Department is going to honor him alongside people like fucking Eugene Debs and Cesar Chavez and act like, oh, yeah, Reagan was great for unions. He was in one at one point. Yeah, before he fucking destroyed them and cracked down on them and did the opposite of pro-worker policies. So it's just, you're lying. You're lying. You're acting like, you know, he's good for a group of people that he wasn't good for. I mean, this is like saying, oh, you know, hey, Ronald Reagan, so pro-black. No, but he wasn't. That's not what he was. At least be honest about what you believe. It's like when the Republicans try to pretend like they're pro-worker. It's like, what do you mean? No, we're not the party of the rich. We're not looking out for the elites. But all of your policies show that you are. Oh, you're not in favor of the rich. You're in favor of the workers. Great. So are you going to raise the minimum wage to a living wage? You want to do free college? You want to do Medicare for all? I thought you said you want to help out workers. You want to encourage unionization? You want pass card check. Pass card check right now for unions. Oh, you're not in favor of that. So perhaps you should stop fucking lying to everybody and be honest about what you believe and say, we are against labor. We are against workers. As long as you're honest, we can have a real discussion here. But they're not being honest. They say, oh, we're for workers, even though our policies are against workers. Let's honor Ronald Reagan as being great for the labor movement, even though he was horrible for the labor movement. So you're just sleazy liars, and that's clear. Okay. I got an update for you guys on an important court case. If you're part of the Trump resistance, look out, because your personal information is not going to be kept private. So look at the results of this case from this week. This is The Intercept. Defying First Amendment concerns, a judge in Washington, D.C. trial court has upheld a controversial search warrant that would allow the government to sift through data from a major protest website. Prosecutors allege that the website, disruptj20.org, was used to coordinate a riot on Inauguration Day, which led to property damage in multiple businesses in downtown Washington. But the vast majority of the actions and protests the site coordinated were peaceful. It's unclear what connection, if any, the site had to violence. Robert E. Morin, the chief judge of the D.C. Superior Court, ruled in favor of the government. But Morin added additional protections, ordering that the government must, before executing its search, file special affidavits describing its procedures. I'm going to be supervising their search, he said. The data that investigators don't identify as criminal evidence would be filed with the court and placed under seal, according to the ruling. Morin forbade the investigators from sharing that data with other government agencies. Okay, so this is a watered-down version of exactly what the government wanted. So this website, you know how many visitors they had? Over a million, about 1.3 million. And what they said, the government said, well, there were riots on Inauguration Day, and these guys are part of the resistance, and their whole website is about the resistance. And we think the people who are linked to the website that they did this. So here's a warrant. We got a warrant. Now we get to search anybody and everybody and all their private information from the website. There's over a million people. What are you talking about? What are you talking about? And that's the case that their lawyers made. They were like, whoa, there's over a million people we're talking about here. You need a specific warrant to search a specific person, place, or thing. You didn't do that. You got a warrant that's a general warrant that says, I'm going to get the private information on over a million fucking people. So what does this dumbass judge do? He goes, well, okay, come on, let's be reasonable here. This is like the old trick, like, oh, let's be centrist. Yeah, but centrist between the Democrats and the Republicans is just pretty far right-wing, because the Democrats are center-right and the Republicans are far-right. So you're pretty solidly right-wing if you're a centrist. This is the same shit. Let's split it down the middle. Come on, guys. So the government wants to search over 1 million people with one warrant, and the lawyers for the website say, no, you need a more specific warrant to search specific people. You can't look at everybody in the website. Well, how about this? We let them search, but I'll oversee it as the judge. Sometimes I don't know how people can possibly be this stupid. Like, that judge is an idiot. Like, really? So now a warrant to search over a million people is totally justifiable.
because you're going to oversee it and make sure they don't cross any boundaries. Please. What they're trying to do, this is the government keeping track of the resistance, anti-Trump people. So in other words, it's for ideological reasons they're cracking down. You don't agree with the administration, you're a potential problem. How about we keep your information on deck here just in case we need it? That's what this is. Tracking you if you commit thought crimes. That's what this is. What evidence are you going to find anyway on a fucking website about riots that happened on Inauguration Day? And by the way, again, yeah, you know, there were the number of riots were infinitesimally small compared to the people who were there and the people who visited this website. So what are you going to do? You're going to go in there and find somebody say, okay, John, let's go commit a riot at 1037 on this street in Washington, D.C. It's not going to fucking happen. They just want to keep track of the people who disagree with the administration. This would be fucked up if it was Obama trying to track conservatives, and it's fucked up when it's Trump trying to track people who are part of the resistance. So what a ridiculous decision from this judge. This judge should be embarrassed because you've been duped. You've been had. See, as long as – so the government makes a claim, and they just insist that their claim is reasonable, and then you met them halfway. But their claim is not even close to reasonable. Hey, there's a disrupt website, a resistance website, and some people committed a riot. So now give me the information on everybody who's ever gone to that website, anybody who's taken part in that website. That's nowhere near reasonable. The answer to that is a hard no. You want a warrant on a specific person who you think was involved with the riot? Present the evidence to me, and then I'll go ahead and grant you that warrant. But you didn't do that. You want a general warrant, and this judge basically granted it because he's a dunce. Okay. All right, I got about 5 minutes left here, and so I will squeeze in this last one. Florida executed somebody last night. This is just your periodic reminder that the United States is basically the only industrialized nation that still has the death penalty. So here's what Vice News says. Florida carried out its first execution in more than 18 months Thursday evening using a lethal injection drug that has never been used before in the United States. What the fuck? Never been used before. Mark Assay, 53 years old, was executed at 6:22 p.m. using the drug etomidate. I don't know how to pronounce that. A sedative that is meant to prevent Assay from feeling any pain once the lethal dosage of an acid is administered. In last-minute court filings, doctors hired by Assay's legal team cautioned the drug can be both short-lasting and painful when injected. A minute after the first drug, a paralytic, was administered, Assay opened his mouth and his foot jerked, the Associated Press reported. He was motionless afterwards and was soon pronounced dead. The execution, which reportedly began at 6:10, took less than 12 minutes to complete. The Florida execution took place without incident. Florida Department of Corrections spokesperson Ashley Cook told Vice News, "The Florida Department of Corrections follows the law and carries out the sentence of the court as laid out in Florida statute." Florida Department of Corrections spokesperson Ashley Cook added in an email statement, "This is the department's most solemn duty, and the foremost objective with the lethal injection procedure is a humane and dignified process." Can we stop bullshitting, everybody, please? Can we stop bullshitting like any way of killing another human being is, quote, humane and dignified? Pretty sure that by definition, killing another human being is not humane and dignified. Even in cases where it's like legitimate self-defense from somebody trying to do harm to you, you have every right to take that person's life in such a situation. But let's not pretend it's, quote, humane and dignified. It's ugly, and it's always ugly, and you're taking somebody's life. Now, we could have all these procedures in place to rationalize it and make us feel better about it and say, there's, well, at least there's some semblance of justice here. But at the end of the day, you're killing a motherfucker. That's what it is. So don't, again, with the dishonesty, I feel like this is just you're just bullshitting us. Just keep it real.
he was a fucked up guy who did fucked up shit, so now we're going to do some fucked up shit to him and kill him, and that's that. At least if you're honest, you're honest. But this is not honesty. Humane and dignified, my fucking ass cheeks. Humane and dignified, you're killing somebody. So in this case, we're talking about, by the way, side point. People pointed out in this case, first time in Florida's history that they executed a white person for killing a black person, where they've done the reverse many, many times. So that seems to me to be some kind of weird perversion of identity politics where they're acting like, isn't it good? Killing a white guy will kill the black guy, No, I don't think we should be killing anybody, because oftentimes we kill the wrong people, which means that every now and then the state murders somebody. So I don't give a fuck what color they are. How about don't kill them? But the fact that they did with a drug that was never used before. So for those of you who haven't followed this closely, the United States of America used to use a three-drug cocktail for lethal injections that was made by a European company. But after a while, the European company said, what are we doing? We don't have the death penalty in Europe. We don't agree with it. So why are we making this cocktail? We're not going to make it anymore. We're not going to sell it to the United States. So in the United States, we panicked. All the states that do the death penalty, they're like, whoa, what am I going to do now? So they made up shit and came up with new cocktails to try to kill people. Well, many of those cocktails were fucked up, and people foamed at the mouth, and people were fucking twitching, and there were multiple horrendous stories of, in one case, they did the injection, and then they called it off like 15 minutes later because the guy wasn't dying, and then the guy died right after that. So 15 minutes of a guy who we thought, oh, you're killing him humanely, in excruciating pain, they're like, yeah, well, that's cool. Don't worry about it. And by the way, we do have an Eighth Amendment to the Constitution, protection from cruel and unusual punishment. Does that sound like cruel and unusual punishment to you? Torturing somebody before you kill them. Now, again, I'm not saying these people are good people because many of them are not. Doesn't mean that we should in turn do something like torture and kill them that seems a little fucked up at a societal level now, doesn't it? Should our tax dollars be going to violating the Eighth Amendment in a brazen way? So then they took some of the drug cocktails that were fucked up and they said, well, we got to keep trying new ones. So now Florida tried another new one. It's 2017 and we're still experimenting with ways to kill people to make ourselves feel better about it. How about we just join the rest of the modern world and get rid of the death penalty? It's not like life in prison without the possibility of parole is a soft punishment. It most certainly is not. Okay, out of time, guys. I love you, and I will see you on Monday. Everybody enjoy your weekend. I'm out. Mwah.